Devin and Morgana have been celebrating midlife love by getting married 100 times in 100 countries. They believe grown-up love gets better and more fun, especially for women. Everyone's smarter, wiser, men are more relationship ready, and if they're not, it's obvious. Forget anything you were told about being too old or too late for love and adventure. Instead, get fresh new tips on dating, relating, and travel to exotic destinations. And best of all, call in for personal guidance, creating crazy, sexy midlife love in your life.
Hello and welcome. This is Morgana with my husband, Devin.
And I'm here and loving Spanish guitar.
Yeah. Well, you play some of it yourself, don't you?
I do, but I wasn't going there. I was just going with our intro. I don't know who that is, but it just sounds fantastico.
That could be your next music lesson.
It might be. We'll see if I'm in the mood for a little nylon string action.
Well, it's funny. My husband, as if he's never met a woman in his life, keeps asking me if his guitar playing bothers me. When, no, I think it's incredibly hot and sexy, and it's like my own private little rock star at home.
It's sort of, well, I'm not going there with it, but I will say it is kind of my COVID-cation. Something, yeah, it's COVID something. It's like, oh, this is the distraction. I guess I'll be playing some guitar.
Devin is becoming really good on guitars, and I'm killing a lot of vegetables.
Well, that's true, and we do have the most... I think we've had 2 tomatoes and 2 strawberries so far, and this is from Morgana's garden. It's a slow process. You have to cut yourself some slack. That I think the expertise of gardening is something that is cultivated and skilled. And
I don't have any of those skills. What I am good at, though, is I'm really good at helping people make money fall in love with them. And I have a win. I just accepted a woman to my Ultimate Money Goddess retreat in Bali next year, June of next year. I had to cancel this year, so I'm putting it out to June of next year. And she's smart and educated and intuitive and compassionate and so committed to integrity. And she was recommended by one of my all-time favorite Bali participants from back in 2017. So she checks all my boxes.
That's wonderful, yeah. And fantastic. And
I wasn't even promoting it. And I guess we're going to do it, aren't we?
I think you should. Totally. I think you should. And hopefully everybody around the world will be healthy and corona free. So for people who are listening may not know what you do with Bali, right? You should take a minute or two.
My background is I have been a mentor coach to the mentors for 26 years. I'm a best-selling author and the creator of Financial Alchemy, Transforming Your Relationship with Money from a Monster to a Honey, as if it money were a lover worthy of your trust and admiration. It changes your dynamic. It changes your behavior. It makes money safe. So that's my day job, which I love. And one of the interesting things that I have found over the years is if you dig deep enough, everybody's money issues are, if you dig deep enough, they're love issues. It's always, always connected. And hey, if you would like to check out your own money love relationship, head over to take my money love quiz at doesmoneyloveyou.com. See how you score and get some free resources to support your next best steps for your abundant life in love and money. And the funny thing, by the way, is I have that quiz because of today's guest. Today's guest is a big online marketing icon who I first saw on a stage in front of thousands of people back in 2005. And he blew me away and intimidated me too with all of his success and skill and his beautiful wife. And And over the years, he's become actually a very dear friend of mine. And I hired him a number of years back to be my business coach, because I'm at a point in my career where I only hire friends. And he was the one who told me that I needed to have a quiz. So Alex, the DoesMoneyLoveYou.com quiz is completely your fault. And before I invite you into the conversation, Alex, there's a little bit more that I want to say about, like, introducing you to Alex Mandosian. And I will let Alex fill you in a little bit more about his accomplishments and, you know, his business cred, which is huge.
It's many.
Yeah. But he also married Devin and me.
Oh, yeah. No, that's exactly right. He married us in the state of Texas outside of Austin.
At a place called the Wizards Academy. And I know technically Devin and I are getting married 100 times in 100 countries, but Texas is a country unto itself. Right?
True. Now, we didn't count that. We counted it in the marriages, in the weddings.
But not as a country.
But not as a country. So, I mean, I think, you know, I think part of the things that we can throw in there is that we should get married in every state if it's conceivable. And I think we've done Arizona, Texas, and California, of course.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, that's okay. That's plenty. It's a good start.
Yeah, and this year we've been slacking, obviously. So anyway, Alex married us in this magical place called the Wizards Academy, and he gave us wedding vows that were so distinct and surprising that it's really the only wedding ceremony that I can recite by heart. And so Alex wished Devin and me a lifetime of lying, cheating, and stealing for our marriage, which really begs the question, what the heck?
Well, I suppose that's something Alex can answer, right?
Well, exactly.
Because it's really outrageous.
I can't believe you said that to us, Alex. So,
yes.
Alex, would you like to come on and explain yourself?
I don't know if he's here yet. Is he here yet?
We'll find out. I should check. I'm not seeing him. Let's check the chat.
No, probably not. So
okay,
we'll talk more.
He's coming now.
Oh, that's exciting.
So, yeah, well, I told him 10 minutes, and we called him a little earlier than that. So, Devin, we didn't really talk about you and who you are. What are you doing in this show?
This show, I'm probably going to be quiet and judgmental from a distance. No, I won't. I appreciate Alex. I think he's a great guy. And I do think that our wedding, you know, one of the things that I've enjoyed doing, and one of the things that the whole wedding project around the world has offered, is a freedom to get married by people who we love and people who love us, and people who are on our team. And so it makes it sort of like a unique thing. Now, like later in 2019, we were in Western Europe, and we were married by a friend of mine who I've known for 40 years. We got married in front of the giant iron molecule where the 1962 World's Fair in Brussels was, on a rainy day. And we had a dear friend kind of come out and say some flowery things. And it was a lovely experience. And I think that's incredible that we have that option. So it doesn't have to be, you know, sort of merely the justice of the priests or a religious leader or something like that. It can be whoever we want. Now, of course, we had the courthouse wedding, which was great. But I think it's so much more romantic and meaningful to have gotten married by somebody who means so much to us.
And getting to get married so many times. You had your childhood friend in Brussels. I had another Bali client of mine, marry us in Paris.
Oh, right.
And then Marcia Weider, longtime friend and colleague, married us in Portugal. And then a woman in Spain, I'm trying to think.
Elizabeth Madeira.
That's right. I had never met her. She was just a big fan of my work. And now she's part of the family. And that's every wedding creates a new family. And it looks like Alex is here. So Alex created another family for us in Texas. So when Alex is available, just insert yourself.
Yes, I think we're having a little bit of technical problems, but I'm sure that'll be remedied shortly.
It seems like there's been just a lot of technical problems since COVID. I hear somebody. Is that you, Alex?
I'm here, yes.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So, Alex, I'm rewinding a little bit. You had the gall to tell Devin and me
On a wedding day.
on a wedding day
Outrageous.
that we should live a life of lying, a marriage of lying, cheating, and stealing. How dare you? Explain yourself, sir.
Well,
And hello,
if you were
Alex.
a well, if I could, if you were to lie in each other's arms for the rest of your lives, if you were to cheat father time and go beyond the time frame that you were supposed to live, and if you were to steal each other's hearts and share the same pillow for the rest of your lives, I think that's a pretty good thing.
That's a pretty good deal. I have chills.
All right, so we might not have been as outraged as we had initially let on. So anyway, welcome, Alex Mondosian. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I'm in 114 degree weather in Scottsdale, Arizona, but I couldn't be better right now. Thank
I'm
you.
so glad. Yay, yay. Was that vow an Armenian wedding vow, or did you make it up?
No, that is an Irish wedding vow. And, Armenians are agnostic, so they just go with whatever sounds good. So I wanted to go against the grain of what would have been expected. And so I believe that if there's a surprise of what lying, stealing, and cheating means, and because you've been married so many times, I thought, wow, why don't I sound clever and make Carol Mondosian, my mother, proud, and pretend as though a couple could be outraged until the very end of the wedding vows. What? How cool would that be? And that's what happened.
It was very cool. And it is the one vow that I remember all these years. So please, before we dive into why I brought you here, would you mind telling our audience a little bit about yourself professionally, just to give some context, and then I'll talk about why I wanted you to be our guest today on the
And
show.
friendship. And we'll talk about
Yeah.
friendship too.
Sure.
So
Well, I'm Alex Mondosian. My formal first name is Ohan Alex Mondosian, which is John or Johan or, however you want to look at it. But I got tired of trying to explain my first and last name, so Alex was easier. And I was born in Pasadena, California, which is in Southern California, in near LA. And what I learned is in a very highly populated Armenian community, which is Glendale, California, if you're familiar with where that is. I was bilingual. I wasn't allowed to speak English until the age of 4. And I was in a family of 4. My sister, my mother, my father, and me. And we grew up in a traditional family of what we would expect. And when I figured out how babies were created. I didn't believe it because I asked my mom. I said, "There's no way you and Dad ever did that, right?" Because I never saw any kind of affection between the two of them, you know. Mm. And then she told me, "Don't ever think about that." That was my birds and bees, speech. So,
very helpful.
Very, very helpful. So we all come from our hidden traumas, but what I learned most is that whatever it takes to create a relationship, I believe a successful relationship over the years is not how well we get along, but it's how fast we reconcile our differences, how fast we can forgive each other. So that's what I told you, Morgana, a couple of days ago, and that's what I believe today. It's not how well we get along, it's how fast we reconcile our differences. So I believe a great relationship is all about that, because stuff is going to go wrong all the time, and we need to know how to adapt.
That's beautiful. So before you came on, I was talking about how successful and well-known you are as this online marketing icon. And I saw you in front of giant rooms, and you've been wildly successful. And you had the beautiful wife, and you were always introducing her. And it was very clear from my standpoint, and I usually can see things that a lot of people can't see. It seemed very clear to me that you loved her deeply, and you were also trying to please her. And how did that work out?
Well, we were married for 15 years. We knew each other for 20 years. We met in New York City, and then we had the birth of our first son in Manhattan and our daughter in Marin County in Northern California. And we were divorced in 2013, and it was the most debilitating event of my life, because she was so much about my life and so much about my kids. And I wanted to be one of the few thought leaders in the area of public speaking and in the area of leadership where I didn't get divorced. And so I thought it was a complete destruction of the family unit to get divorced. And so we got divorced in 2013. That was not fun. Fast forward 6 years later, and we're now best friends. Now, time heals. We've heard that. But that's what it took in order to do that. And so that's why I believe it's not how well we get along, it's how fast we reconcile. 6 years is not very fast, but, for the rest of my life, I'm 56. So if I live another 50 years, I think that's pretty good. So I think that it was Amy Mondoshi, and now it's Amy Avalon. I gave her that name, actually. I think that's a good branding name. If she was doing what she was doing now, we'd still be married. But now I'm giving her references to, get new work. So it's amazing the way, life works. But I've been married once, I've been divorced once, and, there you have it. I have two great kids. They're mine. And some people have a contract to stay married. Some people have a contract to create kids. Some people have a contract to learn something new. I believe it's all of the above, for me.
You brought up something that I've been curious about. Why do you think so many thought leaders get divorced? So many, thought leader, key word there being leader, like in the public eye. Why does that seem to be the norm?
Well, if I could be direct, infidelity. I think that there's so many options that are available to thought leaders when they travel, when they're at events. There's so many different distractions that are there. There's opportunities for infidelity, and infidelity creates divorce, period. A good friend of mine, and I'm sure everyone who's listening right now has heard of him, John Gray, he told me, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard. Infidelity is a great excuse to create a deeper relationship with the relationship you're with, because think about what you've been through. So in my case, it was being away. It was not being present because I was constantly traveling and you know, being the sole provider of the family. But I think with thought leaders, it's because there's so many opportunities to not be true to your primary relationship. I think that's what just happens. And you no longer become the hero. You become the, you know, the guide from the side, or, you know, like, who are you again? Because you're not honored the way other people honor you. And so, you know, it's almost legendary that that's what happens. Now, it's not necessary for it to happen that way, but many times it does. And when it does, there's an opportunity either to stick together or to move apart. So in my case, we were divorced not because of infidelity. It's because we were not aligned with the same ideals. And then now we're closer than we were ever before, just because that's the way it turned out. So, you know, who knew?
I think that's beautiful for you and Amy and the kids. Would you say that, and Devin, you can also chime in. I'm really curious. Do men have a need to be seen as the hero by the significant person in their lives?
Well, if you're asking me, I say yes, but I want to hear what Devin has to say.
Yeah, no, I'm an absolute yes as well. I mean, I think one of the things, at least speaking from my experience and from other men that I've spoken to, is that we want to feel useful. We want to feel appreciated. And I think if we want to solve the problem, that's part of the way, you know, we find ourselves to be useful and have meaning in our life. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, it's part of the little details that give us purpose. And so I think me being of service, and I, you know, this is just to kind of branch off of what Alex was talking about. I think that part of the relationship is being in the relationship. And I think, you know, when thought leaders or anybody is traveling significantly and not there, there's, you know, one or both of the people that are part of the relationship at some point are going to want to fill the void somehow, which is difficult.
And I believe that you can't make someone happy in a relationship. You can only make them happier. So if they have their own stuff happening and they're not happy to begin with, it's almost impossible to have a relationship that's meaningful. But you can make them happier. And so I learned that from someone very wise. And if you know that you can't make them happy, then you eliminate the whole codependency in a relationship that becomes almost corrupt in its sense of authenticity and genuineness. So, yeah, you can make someone happier, but you can't make them happy. So they got to come in being happy to begin with. And there you have a starting point. And that just happens to be an opinion that I have.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I don't think you could make anybody do much of anything. Do you know what I mean? In other words, if they're not interested, it's as simple as you can't lead a horse to water. You know, I mean, you can bring them there, but they may not be drinking it. And that's kind of what's happening. I think the relationship ultimately is about the two people and how you serve each other. But if somebody doesn't want to be in the relationship and they're unhappy, you're not going to be able to fix it.
So there were a couple of reasons that I really wanted you on the show, Alex, besides just loving you. And one of them is...
Thank you.
one of them is I... assume that our audience is predominantly female. I haven't checked with our producer, but I think it's a pretty safe guess that the majority of our listeners are female. And I remember from my dating days, when I would feel so wounded and so discouraged and so heartbroken, I would wonder if men actually had feelings. And, you know, connecting with you after you had had your heart broken, there was such a vulnerability about you. And that's something I would like you to share for the women out there who are wounded, wondering if men really do have feelings, if men can have their hearts broken. I think it's kind of an important thing to share.
Well, I'll say that we're the weaker gender. I believe in two genders, not 42 genders or 99 genders. I mean, things have changed since I've grown up, but I believe in two. So as a man, I believe we're weaker. And I think we can have our heart broken for sure. And it's easy to have the heart broken because depending on what type of, you know, culture we grew up in, for me, I'm of the Armenian ethnic race, and I'm the one who's supposed to be the main breadwinner. And I grew up in a culture where my wife didn't have to work. And we had children, and we would raise them so that, you know, they would be great, you know, citizens. But as far as, you know, breaking of the heart, of course, I mean, that's an easy thing to happen. But admitting it is something else. So it's not a matter of the heart is being broken. It's a matter of admitting it. And so when during my divorce, I lost about 80% of my net worth. So that broke my heart and my financial, you know, stability. So just the way it turned out, that's the way it was. And I thought, man, I'm never going to forgive this person. And then over the years, and time heals, it happened. And so that's why I believe that it's not how well we get along, it's how fast we reconcile. I'm a slow learner. You know, I'm the one who's supposed to be teaching this stuff, but rather than taking 5 or 6 years, it could have taken 3 years, and I would have been much happier afterward. So in any kind of relationship, male-male, female-female, male-female, the faster you reconcile after an upset, whether it's a miscommunication or unmet expectation or misguided intention, you know, those are the three major reasons why people get upset. You know, miscommunication, unmet expectation, or misguided intention. If you can recover from that quickly, then you can lie in each other's arms for the rest of your life. You can cheat father time and be faithful for the rest of your lives. And you can steal each other's hearts and share the same pillow for the rest of your lives. And that's what was, you know, what I hope for the both of you in Austin, Texas, when I married you both.
And so far, so good. And to kind of dovetail upon that idea, and now my mind went totally blank.
Well, fine, because I had something to say.
Oh, good.
To your credit, even though you felt really victimized and betrayed, I did. Totally. And you were still very kind and generous to the mother of your children, which is why I think you can have a relationship with her now.
Well, I went through therapy. And the one thing my therapist told me is, and this is in 2013, 2014, which is 7 years ago, is never talk shit about your spouse in front of your kids. And I said, why not? I really want to. I really want to talk shit about, you know, my spouse. Do not. Why not? Because they will never understand it. They came from their mom. And then I thought about that for a long time. And it was such a lonely, you know, journey for me, because I remember I used to drop them off at the home I built. Actually, it's the home that Teleseminar Secrets built, which you know quite well, Morgana.
So I helped build it.
Yeah, I know. I know you did. At least $2,500 worth. And so when the window went up, I would just curse and, you know, flip the bird and go, God, you know, blank you, blah, blah. You know, I was just so upset because my son would look back and say, Dad, I love you. And my daughter had a different approach. She would just keep moving forward because she would just, you know, divorce herself after I dropped her off. And I thought, this is not the way it's supposed to be. And yet it is the way it turned out. And so if I were to learn anything from that, it's the way to, and it's very poetic in business too. It's the way to adapt, whether it's during COVID-19 or it's during a recession. How do you adapt when these unseen forces seem to consume your life? And I believe it's the way you reconcile the differences between you and a very significant relationship. And if I were to think of the 10 people in my life who I would be willing to die in their arms, like my final breath, between the inhale and the exhale of my final breath, who would be one of the 10 people I would be willing and open to die in their arms? It would be my former wife, Amy. Mm. And so I think that that's a testament to healing and forgiveness as well as growth, because I would say that I was bound to grow more than she was, because men are a little bit behind in the course of growth. I'm not trying to win the women over right now listening, but that just seems to be the case from time to time.
I would fall in line with that as well. I think the women are the fairer of the genders. I think they are superior, far superior in emotional intelligence. And they just have, I think they're already attuned to sort of like the idea of community. And when I say community, I'm not just talking about large groups of people. I think they're talking about, or I'm talking about also intimate relationships. And I think it's important. And to dovetail on the idea that Alex was talking about, in terms of sort of like getting over it quickly, I'm a big believer that if we keep talking about something, like we become really close friends, and it doesn't matter who I'm referring to, right? No matter who I'm dealing with, and if I become close with them, at some point, I'm going to have a disagreement with them about ideology or unmet expectations or something. There's going to be some sort of significant disagreement about how we see the world and how it's supposed to be. And if I sort of insulate myself by my own sort of principles, my own ideals about who I'm allowed to talk to and who I'm not to, and if I'm going to be offended and all these kinds of things, it doesn't serve me to kind of put that measure of expectation on another person, that anybody that I'm going to deal with has to, across the board, see it how I do. And so with that in mind, I have to give the other person space to fail and to disagree with me vehemently and to have frank exchanges of ideas. But of course, my job ultimately is, how do I keep serving the relationship? Mm. Even when we disagree.
Even when you're wrong.
That's right too. Because that's bound to happen.
Once in a blue moon. And then you make it up by bringing me a cat.
Right, and we brought too many. Alex, do you need a cat?
No, I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person, but I can live with a cat as well. You know, at least they know where to poop, you know.
Yeah. They do. They're born that way. It's amazing.
They are, because they're feminine. They're feminine. They have their space. They know where to go.
So true. So one of the premises of, you know, Crazy Sexy Midlife Love is that it's better because we made all of our horrible mistakes And now we make better choices. What will you do differently or choose differently in the future, knowing what you know now?
Well, I believe that all love starts with a level of pain and commiseration. So, you know, when you look at something you're moving away from and moving toward, pain and pleasure, most people understand what pain is like. They know and they understand what pain is because they've lived through it, whereas pleasure becomes a vision they haven't experienced yet or they want, something that they haven't gotten yet. So I believe when there's a relationship between a couple, and no matter what gender they are, if they can identify similar pain that they've gone through and they can relate to that level of pain and what they want to avoid, that becomes the foundation of the relationship. And then they can together start creating what the future pleasure or vision looks like. So I used to think that, hey, this is the ideal person for me, and that would be moving toward. But today, after having gone through one divorce and one marriage, several relationships, two amazing children, over 750,000 clients and students, I've realized that all the nectar, all the meaning is in, you know, the pain that has been shared. And so if there is a collaboration and there's a meaning and there's a connection with a level of pain that two people have experienced, it's much easier for them to create a vision for their future versus saying, here's the ideal mate for me. Here's the ideal partner for me. I used to think that. I don't think that anymore. I want to know who has felt the same things I felt. I don't think I'd ever connect with someone who has been single throughout their lives. I'd want someone who's divorced. I'd want someone who has ever had kids. For me, that's not shrapnel, or that's not excess baggage for me. They understand what I've been through, and I know what they've been through. And so that's what I've learned over the years, is just connecting with the pain component so that pleasure can be by default. And I hope that makes sense to everyone listening, but that's the sustainable process that I've seen that works, and that's the way things work in marketing as well. And I've been doing that a long time, and it seems to work as well. That's a marriage, but it's polyamorous. I mean, that's many students, and it's many, many members and many clients, right? But it's all in connecting with the pain before the pleasure that makes all the sense in the world. And that's where I've changed, whereas before I was looking for, okay, what do you want? No. Where have you hurt in the past? And there lies all the traction for the future.
Wow, that's very sweet. So, like, if I were to frame that into positive words, there's a mutual respect from kind of understanding just how heavy these loads have been, and there's empathy and...
Well, it's a commonality of experience.
Yeah.
It's a shared experience and hopefully a shared series of lessons that come from the pain, discomfort.
Yeah. And
it's a wink. It's a wink. It's a wink and a smile. It's a wink and a smile from where you came from, regardless of, you know, what the relationship was like. So it's not the way I thought before, but I do now only because I just feel I have so much more in common when people have felt the same pain that I have.
And if you get married again, are you going to travel as much or have a partner who travels with you?
The ideal scene would be someone with kids, someone mm-hmm. who's been divorced, and someone I could travel with, for sure. Mm-hmm. No question. And then someone who's a teacher, like me.
Ah. Uh-huh.
So I don't want to lead. I Albert Camus, I think it was French, he said, "Don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Walk beside me." Mm-hmm. So that's what I want. I just want someone that, you know, I can connect with that has similar experience. And maybe not the exact same status, but just understands the same pain and the potential pleasure that's available. So I found that the pain point is the starting point, not the pleasure point, which is interesting.
So I love all this. And I'm just curious, because my daughter's now 20 years old. And, she's dating and she's out in the world and she's doing her own thing. She's on a big, big, fancy university campus. And when I immediately, as somebody who wants to help, have sort of like, hey, here's some things I would love for you to know, my dream boat, in order to have a happier dating life. I think your kids are they really grown up, or are they just sort of like on the cusp of adultness?
Well, they've been fortunate enough to have this philosophy ingrained in them. So one is 19, one is 17 at the time of this recording. And they're very wise. I mean, they're a lot smarter than I am, and they give me dating advice, to be honest. But they know that... having something in common with a date or a mate has to do more with pain than what their vision of what the future looks like, which is so important because there's so much more rapport in the experiential process of knowing what someone has been through. And I'm very proud of them for that, because they're young, but at the same time, you know, I'm going to be very protective, and yet at the same time, I can't be, because it's going to be up to them. So they have to go through their own pain, and they have to go through their own process, and that's what's very frustrating as a human and as a father, but I think that's what's necessary.
And that's kind of where I was going. I think my daughter is really adept at a severe eye roll. And I mean well, and I have some experience, and I've certainly had my share of pain within relationships and experiences in love. And so it's just a universal thing, yeah?
That
it's a challenge to talk to them as much as you want to be of love and support. And at some point, I would agree with you that, you know, my daughter's 20. She belongs to the world. She calls me up and tells me what she's doing. It's not a question. If it is, then, you know, I would probably interject. But I've found over the last couple of years where it's just kind of serves me to offer hugs and kisses and support for whatever she's going after.
So, I will tell you, the most important thing is telling the truth. And that includes any relationship I'm in. And that means withholding the truth is a lie. So telling the truth, revealing the truth seems to be the same thing. And so where I fell short was withholding. And so if that is all I can do is tell the truth and not withhold, then there's good things that will happen from that. If I withhold, bad things will happen. And that includes my kids and everybody else.
And do you think that was a cultural thing? Because you mentioned that earlier about sort of the birds and bees talks with mom.
I think it is. I think I was bred, you know, in an Armenian household, and withholding and secrets were a big thing because we weren't very, you know, transparent with each other. But, you know, Morgana, more than anyone knows, you know, at least listening right now, is how transparent I am as a teacher. And that has been a big, that's been a big result of the revenue I've generated because of that level of transparency. And so somehow I broke the chains of withholding. And so I believe in a relationship, withholding is lying. And I don't know if that's a feminine thing or a masculine thing. I mean, I guess many people would say it would be feminine to just share and to communicate. But whatever it may be, who knows? I mean, times change. I believe that transparency does foster deeper and more meaningful relationships, and that's the direction I've gone with business because it's made a very good living for me and for my family, and I think that's the way it would work for any kind of relationship. And it's not easy. It's hard, but it doesn't matter as long as it's sustained that way.
It's also what I've liked about you the most over the years is there's a lot of puffery and insecurity in our industry with people talking about their watches and showing photos of their jets. And I don't relate to that. That isn't, I relate to human beings and you bring your humanity, which is something I like about you. One of the reasons I wanted to bring you here is you share your stories about your business, but there are a lot of people who haven't known, you know, about what went on with you personally. And it did wipe you out and you rebuilt. Did you do that differently too?
Well, someone reached out to me, a friend of mine reached out and said, look, you know, the most romantic story in a hero's journey is the comeback. And I said, really? I failed. I failed at my marriage. I mean, that's all I talked about is staying married and being a professional speaker and being a public figure in my own little world. And I felt like a complete disaster and, I failed. I was a complete failure because it was so much a part of my story. And then when this one person told me, there's nothing more endearing than a comeback, then I had to redefine everything. And I thought, all right, well, so be it. I don't really like my former wife right now, but we'll deal with it. And then, you know, 6 years later, we talk almost every day. So it's amazing the way time heals, but it's not something that was expected. But at the same time, it was human. And when I was willing to deal with it publicly, it was a release and it was a healing, you know, process. And so I believe that once again, it's not how well we get along, it's how fast we reconcile. And I didn't do well with my first marriage and my only marriage. It took about 6 years, but with friends, with colleagues, with business partners, if you're able to reconcile quickly, and I have three questions that I ask people these days, and I learned it from a mentor of mine, and you met, both of you have met him, Roy H. Williams.
And oh, I love him. Yeah.
I mean, so when something goes wrong and you're upset, three questions, and it just accelerates reconciliation. Number one, what happened? Okay, and then they tell you, wah, 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 wah. Okay, is there more? Wah, wah, wah. Okay, great. What should have happened? That's question number two. Not shooting all over you, but what should have happened? That's their vision. Wah, 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 wah. Is there more? Wah. Okay, thank you. How can we make it right? Wah, wah. Whatever that is. So I don't even listen to what they say, but how can we make it right? So what happened, what should have happened, how can we make it right? If you do that with your children, if you do that with your significant other who made that, you know, whoever that may be, It's a Socratic 2,500-year-old method that works. And, oh, it is liberating, and it just frees you of being consigned to the contempt or any kind of resentment that you hold for someone. Because when you don't forgive the other person, you're in jail. Well, you're still living, and it just sucks. But once you give that up, what happened, what should have happened, how can we make it right? You ask those three questions, I wouldn't think it's, you know, it's not an antidote to all the upsets that you would ever have, but, you know, it does take care of at least 80% of them. So it's just food for thought. If you could give it a try, it's worthwhile.
I believe that forgiveness is not something you should ever force or should on anybody, because anger and resentment is a form of protecting yourself. It's a way we say, no, this boundary was crossed. And in many cases, we maintain it because we don't feel safe and we don't want to be hurt like that again. What I love about what you shared was the final question with the what can we do? If there is partnership, that creates safety. And in my experience, when you create safety, the reason for the resentment goes away, and forgiveness naturally happens when we no longer feel threatened. It diffuses that energy. So that, I love that. Devin wrote that down. It was, can you repeat those three questions?
What happened? Let him speak. Is there more? What should have happened? Let him speak. Anything else? How can we make it right? Let him tell you.
And you didn't invalidate their experience in any way, which is also a really, really big piece for...
It's impossible to invalidate with questions, you know? You can only invalidate with criticism with statements, with ellipses and exclamation points. But with a question mark, it's hard to invalidate. So that's what really, you know, matters. And it does require a sense of humility. It does require a sense of gratitude, you know, from that position. But if the relationship is not worth letting go, I mean, you know, people change their mindset and their entire outlook if they had 2 days to live. They would call family, friends, and they would ask for forgiveness who they haven't been speaking to someone for years, right? If they had 2 days to live, their final breath, unless they're in India, because they, you know, they believe in many lives. And I've never been able to sell well in India because they go, hey, not this lifetime, the next one, right? So I can't get them to run to the back table, you know. But, you know, I love them. I love them because I do have many Sanskrit words that I speak. But, you know, when you look at the human condition, if you had 2 days to live, you would act differently than you do today. So what happened? You know, what should have happened? How can we make it right? Collaboratively, I found those three questions. By the way, those are great questions to get a refund request in any business to get overturned. I found that 35% of our refund requests get overturned by asking those three questions when I teach my support staff to do that. And you can teach anyone to do it in less than 10 minutes. So it's worthwhile just to test, and hopefully it'll have an impact on anyone listening right now.
And speaking of which, I am sure that there will be people listening who will want to find out how to actually get to know you better and what you do. So your website, and we'll be putting this on the page with the replay, I believe it's allsellingaside.com. Did I get that right?
Yeah, that's right. That's my public service. If you go to marketingonline.com, I'm going to sell you something. So don't go there. Go to allsellingaside.com. That's 25 years of sales, marketing, persuasion, know-how put into 25 minutes or less. I remember speaking to Devin in Austin, and you know, he was very cynical about my intentions at one time, and then we got to know each other quite well. And so allsellingaside.com will get to know me better, because if you hate to sell, that podcast was designed specifically for you.
That's wonderful.
Cynical. Well, maybe a little bit. You know,
well, why not?
No, totally. It's all a process. So I think we're down to about 90 seconds.
This is probably something that I should have asked 40 minutes ago, but do you think you'll ever get married again?
Yes.
Why?
Because I think there's someone there who would be the ideal scene and fit, and vice versa, and I would want to make that bond again.
Well, my intention that kind of was happening spontaneously as you were describing what you wanted was to sort of cast that as a spell out into the universe, to start searching around for your person, to bring her into your sphere. I have no doubt that that's going to happen.
Well, thank you.
So we love you. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex. I think it's so valuable to have your experience, the masculine point of view, this dramatic story of loss and healing, and just you bringing your you-ness. That's what makes
you
so cool.
It was fun. I mean, I knew what I was expecting of myself, so thank you for allowing me to be vulnerable. It's a good, it's good training for me.
Excellent.
And something worth practicing always. And so certainly just to repeat it, because I think it bears it, what happened, what should have happened, and how can we make it right? Pearls of wisdom.
Pearls of wisdom. So this has been Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. You can see our first 11 weddings in 3 minutes at crazysexymidlifelove.com. And we will see you again next week, Wednesday, 5 p.m. Pacific time.
And thank you, Alex Mondosian, for being with us today.
Thank you.
To the both of you.
Thank you for listening to Crazy Sexy Midlife Love. Please sign up to join our free love family at crazysexymidlifelove.com. To get alerts to live shows, call in and ask questions, or just listen in. And ladies, don't forget to download Devin's free ebook, Women Are Smarter Than Men and Other Secrets Marriage-Minded Women Need to Know. Also available at crazysexymidlifelove.com.